Pope Benedict XVI on Thursday signed a decree recognizing the heroic virtue of the servant of God, Archbishop Fulton John Sheen, allowing him to be styled as Venerable. This is the second major step in the process of his cause for canonization. Archbishop Sheen was ordained a priest of the Diocese of Peoria, Illinois, in 1919. He served the church in Peoria for more than 3 decades before being appointed auxiliary bishop of the Archdiocese of New York in 1951 and became the Bishop of Rochester, New York, in 1966. During his years of service, he became the leading religious radio and television personality in the United States while continuing to publish books and articles prolifically. Bishop Daniel Jenke of Peoria told Vatican Radio's Emer McCarthy, "The declaration gives U.S. Catholics renewed confidence in a timely intercessor."
Well, Fulton Sheen is a son of this diocese. He was born in a little town, El Paso, about a half hour away from Peoria. He moved to Peoria, went to the Catholic Cathedral Grammar School, went to our Catholic high school, Spalding, at that time, was ordained a priest of this diocese. He has a million relatives that live here to this day, and was always a spiritual guide for the clergy and faithful of this local church. I was just named Bishop of Peoria when some lay people from across the country asked if the Peoria Diocese would sponsor the cause. I grew up watching Fulton Sheen, even as a little kid, as a young kid in grammar school. In our house, when the Bishop Sheen came on, all things stopped. And I don't know what I would have understood in those days, but he was such a riveting speaker. He was always wearing his ferriola, and he had this little gimmick of when he'd write on the board, he'd go off camera and an angel would erase it. And as children, we watched that. Now, I've seen most of his presentations since then as an adult, and they've lost none of their relevance. And I had read any of his books as a seminarian and as a priest, so I was aware before this diocese had the privilege of promoting his cause how important he was, not just to Peoria, but to the entire American Catholic Church.
In fact, because there are people still alive today who will remember, particularly in the United States, who will remember the figure of Archbishop Fulton Sheen. But perhaps for those of our listeners who are not U.S. natives, you spoke about watching and being riveted to that weekly appointment he had with the American public, the wider public, Catholic and non-Catholic. You're speaking about a very special television program, aren't you? Can you tell us a little bit about the story behind that? It was groundbreaking for its time.
It was. Television was brand new. I know that sounds amazing today. And he got into the media when no one else was doing that, really. He, you know, on this solemnity of Peter and Paul, letter writing was the media that Paul took advantage of with the time of the Roman Empire. Before that, it was very hard to write a letter from one end of the Roman world to the other. Paul used letters, even to the Church of Rome, which he had not founded. His letter to the Romans, he had not yet visited. And I would say Fulton Sheen, first on radio before World War II and during World War II, the Catholic Hour, and then brand new on TV. And he actually won an Emmy, the highest award you could win as a TV personality, and was watched by everyone. The largest religious percentage of viewers were Jewish. I mean, they're a tiny group in the United States, but a higher percentage of Jewish believers watched his show than Protestant or Catholic, although, believe me, Protestants and Catholics watched it. So he had an appeal to a wide audience. He was a born speaker and always began with a little self-depreciating humor and then moved into just a wonderful message. So he is important to the media, and he's certainly important for Billy Graham, one of the great Protestant evangelizers in this country, described him as perhaps the best evangelist he had ever met. And he did that relentlessly, not just on TV and radio. He was famous for talking to cab drivers and people on the streets and nurses in hospitals. He had all his priesthood. He served went to prisons and evangelized. But he was always up to date in something I know you would appreciate in Vatican Radio, in using the media as it was unfolding in those days. First the radio and then TV.
There's two aspects there of your answer that I'd like to highlight. The first, of course, being the fact that he used modern means of communication to continue evangelizing. He was known as one of the greatest evangelizers of the last century. And the second one is that his ability, not only as a media person, but his ability to speak about the faith and communicate the faith, came from a very profound philosophical and theological preparation in the faith. He can't be written off as just... Some observers, when they were speaking of him, would almost call him lightweight. That belies the actual depth of his knowledge.
Well, that's very insightful. He had one of the most advanced degrees offered in the Western world from Louvain. Had he not, he first served one of my predecessors in Peoria, assigned him to a very poor parish in Peoria after he came home from his postdoctoral degree to see if he would obey. And he went door to door and worked miracles as a parish priest, as a parochial vicar in Peoria. Then he was allowed to teach first philosophy at Catholic University and then theology in Washington, D.C. And had he not gone into, for want of a better word, popular preaching, he would have been one of the principal Catholic scholars. And he never lost his profound understanding of the faith. He was current in psychology, in all the newest trends in philosophy and theology. But he had the unique gift of turning that into a message that ordinary people, not just experts, could understand. And for those TV shows, he would spend hours in preparation. He would deliver the show in French first, just so he could memorize it, and sometimes in other languages. And he would get it inside him, so when he appeared on television, he was ready to communicate. But clearly, had things unfolded differently, he would have been at other major universities besides Catholic University. He was invited all over the world before he became a radio and a TV star to do serious theology and to teach it at great schools. But I believe the Holy Spirit called him to teach the whole church all around the world. And I served a lot of my life as a priest at the University of Notre Dame. And sometimes great learning does not make you a great teacher. And sometimes profound scholarship does not help someone to undertake catechesis. But he had the gift. He could take some of the most profound concepts of our great Catholic tradition and bring it to a level that people would understand. And that's unusual in a great scholar.
Just to contextualize this for our listeners, we're speaking about a TV show that was broadcast in the mid-50s, a radio, of course, the Catholic Hour, which preceded this. We're talking about the 40s, just after Second World War, TV show, right. Inter-mainstream TV in the 1950s. However, preceding his career in the media, he was a contemporary and admired by figures such as Chesterton. He went to Louvain University. He, as you said, traveled around the world. He was in the Eucharistic Congresses. He was one of the main speakers in many of the Eucharistic Congresses. The one in 1932 in Dublin, he drew a crowd of tens of thousands. So he really covered the entire dichotomy of what it meant to be an evangelizer. It's quite timely then that only 20 years after his death, because he died in 1984, so when he's still alive in many people's living memory, we're already talking about this man on the road to sainthood. And particularly at this time, when Pope Benedict is speaking about the need for new evangelization, when he's called a year of faith, there couldn't be much better figure than that of Fulton Sheen, could there?
I couldn't agree with you more. Among his other responsibilities, he was the national director for the Society for the Propagation of the Faith. He raised money to support the missions and to evangelize throughout the world. But he not only did it raise money, he went all around the world constantly. He was preaching in the Philippines, in Africa, in Asia. As you say, he certainly had a deep devotion to Ireland. He was there frequently. He preached in London. But he had that worldwide vision of the call of the church to announce the good news. Everything our Holy Father is calling everyone in the church to do. He was a manifest example of that kind of zeal. He lived what he spoke about on TV and radio. And he continued doing that all his life, even to his last years where he was very frail and weak. He had a passion for announcing the gospel to anyone who would listen. And he had long experience in the foreign missions personally, sleeping on the floor of missionaries' huts and going up and down kind of scary rivers to go to some leprosarium or to go to some mission statement. He certainly lived what the Holy Father is calling us all to do.
I believe that when he met the Pope once, it was Pius XII, he asked Fulton Sheen, "How many people have you actually converted to Christianity?" And Fulton Sheen responded, "I don't keep count, because if I did, then I would think it was me who was doing it and not the Lord." But could you just take us through perhaps some of the more notable stories of how he brought people to the faith?
Well, he was obviously a riveting preacher, so we can think of those large assemblies. But he was also well known. In his last years, he was quite frequently ill. He was in an emergency room, an intensive care unit, himself. He didn't die on this occasion, but I've been in and out of intensive care units as a priest and as a bishop. People are focused on surviving, and the nurses and the doctors. He talked to somebody on one occasion in the next cubicle. You know, there's those curtains in emergency rooms. And he was sharing the faith even in that circumstance. He was famous for meeting homeless people. When I was growing up, they were sometimes called hobos. He would evangelize people who he would bump into on the streets of big cities. He did not disdain, like the Lord, he did not disdain public sinners. He would encounter somebody who was intoxicated or perhaps on drugs. And it wasn't just a matter of passing on the price of a meal or a cup of coffee. He would give them a medal, or he'd say, "Come and see me." Now, can you imagine that? And try to bring them to the faith. He had a passion for prison ministry, which he did all his priestly life. And it wasn't much advertised at the time he was on TV, but he really wanted to reach out to those in prison. I believe it's the Lord who said, "I was in prison and you visited me." Well, Fulton Sheen did all those things. He engaged people on the highest levels of our culture. He brought in very famous converts to the faith, and then he engaged people that no one ever had or will hear about, and he did it without that part of his ministry necessarily receiving great recognition. Everybody knows his famous converts, but he brought many, many people that no one's ever heard of to the Catholic faith.
Just bring us through the steps that have taken place so far in this diocesan inquiry that brought us to the June 28th declaration of his life and virtues as a venerable. And then perhaps take us through what happens next.
It begins by a group of fundamentally lay people with, I think, a number of priests approached me literally within 2 months of my being arriving in Peoria. And since I had a great admiration, it didn't take me long to say yes. Then a diocesan tribunal is opened. There was many, many interviews with people who knew him. There's many members of his family in central Illinois, but many people, our diocesan tribunal traveled across the country, did extensive research. All of that was studied within the diocese, and then at a certain point, after the diocesan tribunal was completed, it was brought to the Congregation for the Cause of the Saints, where another whole process has begun, and they examine everything that the Diocese of Peoria did. He was named a servant. He was a servant of God, first of all, and then recently, obviously, as recent as the day before yesterday, the Holy Father, the Congregation for the Cause of the Saints voted, the cardinals and archbishops recommended, and with great joy for me and for so many people, His Holiness described him as venerable, which means his virtues, his heroic virtues, are held up to the universal church for our imitation. Alleged miracles have been investigated in this diocese and then turned over to the Congregation for the Cause of the Saints. Only His Holiness can declare that God works miracles every day, but a miracle for beatification, of course, is a judgment of the Apostolic See of our Supreme Pontiff. And that is before the Congregation, which will eventually make recommendations to the Holy Father. If he is declared blessed, Pope Benedict XVI has the beatifications where the cause was inaugurated. And so if God and the Holy Father agree, the Diocese of Peoria will invite the world to come to Peoria for a solemn beatification. And then we will continue to pray that God manifests His will. If there is another miracle, then there would be a canonization in Rome. I think that's the process. There's, of course, as you well know, canonists get involved and historians and some of the great prelates of the church, but I believe I've outlined what the process is.
My final question, and this is bringing Fulton Sheen very much back into the current context there in the United States of America, where we have seen you, the bishops as church leaders, and your collaborators in the church really taking on a battle, if we can say it is a battle, for the defense of religious liberty and freedoms in the United States, which you feel are very much under attack at the moment and in the current climate. Do you think that we could learn something from Fulton Sheen's method of evangelization ground up, as well as keeping a dialogue open with, you know, those in leadership in society?
I believe he is the perfect person to emulate in our current grave difficulties. He took on, in the 1930s, National Socialism, when in those days of depression, there, you know, before World War II, there were folks that thought, well, maybe that's the way to go. He took on atheistic communism in those days. He was not afraid to confront what was wrong. And in the United States today, which has a First Amendment, which not only says you do not establish a state church, it says the government may not interfere in the eternal affairs of religions. That's why so many people travel to the States for freedom of religion. So this is unprecedented, the attack upon the church, where the government defines what a ministry is and what a ministry is not, namely that our houses of worship would be set free from having to pay for abortions or sterilization or contraception. Our churches, but not our schools, not our hospitals. I'm sitting in my chancery office, not the employees of the chancery, not our seminaries, not our Newman centers. So this is an appalling attack on freedom of religion. And he would dialogue with the world, with people of goodwill. But I also know he had steel in him that comes from faith and a daily regime of prayer. And he would be, if God and the Holy See agree, the first native-born American male, the first native-born Catholic bishop. And I also would say his lifelong legacy was not being afraid to confront evil, and to understand as well the American Constitution and American civil culture. So we need to ask him to pray with us and for us in these really quite scary days.
Bishop Jenke, thank you very much. I don't really have any other questions. Is there anything you'd like to add that you feel we haven't really covered?
Well, this is a personal note. I was at the Ad Limina for the what's called Region 7, the bishops of Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin. We have, of course, the extraordinary privilege of meeting His Holiness the Pope, and I've never met this Pope or his predecessor without feeling a little overawed, and I'm wondering, how would I casually introduce the name Fulton Sheen to those, you know, when you're standing before the Vicar of Christ on Earth? So you introduce yourself, you say your name, and I said, I'm from the Diocese of Peoria. And the Holy Father, who has such a gentle and charming way of making you feel at home, his eyes lit up and he said, Fulton Sheen from Peoria, I knew him. And I was immediately set at ease, and I didn't have to find some way to introduce the name. His Holiness introduced the name. And among all the blessings of any time I've been in the presence of the Pope, that was kind of a special moment for me.